The following is a discussion by His Holiness Jayavataka Swami on September 24, 1984 in Atlanta, Georgia. His Holiness Jayavataka Swami is discussing Srila Prabhupada Nectar.
Our temple in Calcutta is on 3 Albert Road at the Queen Victoria Square. And Prabhupada said that that is the part of Calcutta that when he was a boy was known as the side quarter, or the area where the British used to stay. In fact, the owner of that house used to be a knight. He was knighted by the King of England. And down the road is Sir Lord Sinha, or Lord Sinha Road, with some Lord Sinha. Like that there was. That's where all the the Indian gentlemen who become English nobles, or English knights or whatever, and where all the English people would stay. So he used to tell us how he would drive through there on his bicycle. He'd go through and look at the houses when he was a boy. Before that, Srila Prabhupada was saying that normally that area, it was like an exclusive area where only the very elite people would stay. So he used to go through on his bicycle. He said, now we have our temple here. It's nice. He'd sometimes make a joke. He's staying in the side quarter. The English people were called Sahib. Then Srila Prabhupada also told us that when he was a boy, that they would, sometime when they come to the Maidan, in the center of Calcutta, like in New York, there's Central Park. In the center of Calcutta, there's a big Maidan, or a big, like a park. It's all grass. And that park is under the control of Fort William, which is the army base. But it's a very beautiful, very big park. It must be about several miles long by 2 miles or 3 miles wide. It's quite large, at least 20, 30 city blocks long. Goes right from the site of the Ganges to the, what's now known as, what's known as the Chalangi Road, now it's known as something else. So along that stretch, Prabhupada said sometime his father would have him walk to save the tram fare, which used to be 5 paisa. So then they'd walk. And he remember walking along the Maidan as a child with his father. And he also told us that at that time there was King George. Actually, it came because we were following Chatur Mas one year. Bhavananda Maharaj, myself, Achyutananda Swami, and Gargamuni Swami. The 4 of us were following Chatur Mas, so we were just eating once a day. We were doing the austerities, chanting 64 rounds. So we also let our hair and beard grow. So then he saw Bhavananda and he said, you look just like King George. And then, you know, everyone laughed like that. He said, no, he said, I have seen. And then he went on to explain that when he was in school, at that time King George came, I don't forget what number, King George the 5th or something. The 5th? He came to India. Went by ship and came all the way to India. And that time, their capital was in Calcutta, I believe. So when he came there, they had all the school children line up alongside the road. And so, and then he remembers that he saw, you know, King George go by in his limousine, open air, and everyone was cheering and everything. A schoolboy. So then he said, so I've seen you just like Bhavananda Maharaj. And then he said that at that occasion, they also gave a box lunch to all the children at school. Samosa, some sweet. Everyone got a little box to commemorate the arrival of King George V to Calcutta. If you see the old pictures of Calcutta, in Calcutta, one time Prabhupada went to see the Victoria Memorial. We went with him. And there they have the pictures of Calcutta as it was in the 1800s. And the same buildings are still there. A lot of them. Not all of them. But, you know, at that time they were very stately. I mean, even now they're a little bit run down, but at that time they were very stately buildings, and it was very well maintained. And they had all the horses and buggies and everything. Quite thriving place. No, in Calcutta, there's they constructed a memorial for Queen Victoria, calling the Victoria Memorial, and that's in the middle of that Maidan in Calcutta. 170 feet high, solid marble. Something like the Taj Mahal, and they're not quite so big or exclusive. See, regarding Calcutta, those are the main things I can remember that Prabhupada said. One thing that he said one day, he was giving class in Calcutta, and he told the devotees in Calcutta, he said that I don't know how you're doing it, that how you're able to remain here in Calcutta. This is all with Krishna's mercy, because even I find it difficult, even I can't remain here. I have to travel, something like that. He made a little joke out of it. But then he said, because this is my birthplace city, and you're here, you're getting 10,000 times the credit for doing devotional service here than anywhere else, than that, you know, if you were back in your own country. And then, actually then it was, he said that even I can't remain here, but you're taking this austerity, because Calcutta is very crowded now. It's quite a change for someone from the West. And actually he was very moved. He was very thankful that the devotees were taking that austerity of remaining in Calcutta, Bengal, and helping him to revitalize the Sankirtan movement in its original place. Then in Calcutta, the first thing that happened, Prabhupada sent, Chitananda Swami was in Calcutta, and Srila Prabhupada, I had started the Toronto Center, and then Jagadish Das Adhikari had come up, and we mutually decided that he could be the president. Then I wrote Prabhupada if he had another service, because I'd already started that temple, it was going nicely, there was a president, so I could go and open a new temple, or I could do anything he wanted, or I could stay there, whatever he wanted. So he wrote back and said, I want you to go to India, to Calcutta. Please come and see me. So then I flew to Los Angeles to get instruction from Srila Prabhupada. At that time, Srila Prabhupada, he called me in his room, and then he read to me some of the letters from Achyutananda Das Brahmachari. And he said that he has the place, so you can go. And then by the time I reached there, that's what he said in his letter. But come and explain. In the meantime, another letter came from Achyutananda Swami, Das Brahmachari, at that time, that he was still staying in the Gaudiya Math in Satish Mukherjee Avenue in Bhawanipur, Calcutta, the southern part of Calcutta. And then Prabhupada said that, I don't want you to go until we have our own place. It was very cryptic. I mean, he said, I'll explain everything to you, but just before you go. He didn't want, until I was just ready to go, he didn't want to explain everything. And I had 2-3 meetings with Prabhupada in his quarters in Los Angeles. And then, I remember in the second meeting, he read this letter, something about something that his godbrothers had said or something. And I remember his servant was Devananda Das. Maybe it was a Swami, I'm not sure at that time. I don't think so. But Devananda, he said that, I think that your God brothers, they're envious. And then it struck me funny, you know, being a very simple, just being here in the West, it seemed very unusual to me that how could a God brother be envious or something like that. And then, sure enough, Prabhupada blasted them and said that they're my God brothers. You have no right to question them or criticize them. They're my God brothers. And that, you have no right. And then I thought, yes, he just confirmed he was off by saying that, because it sounded unusual to me. And then Prabhupada said, I'm not going to send you to India now because they don't have their own place. Until they have their own place. So at that time, Bhagavan Maharaj was, Bhagavan Das Adhikari was going from Detroit to open up a center in Chicago. So then Prabhupada said I could go to Chicago and help him open that center. And then he would call me when it was time to go to India. So then we had that historical ride with Rupanuga Prabhu where the car didn't stay on the road near Albuquerque, New Mexico. But anyway, somehow I reached Chicago. And then Prabhupada sent me a telegram, please call. So I phoned Srila Prabhupada up. And I got the message that you go immediately to India, to Calcutta. They have their own place. You don't have to come back and get any information from Prabhupada. It's all right. Garga Muni gave me that message. So then I never got the briefing that Prabhupada said he was going to give me, what to watch out for, what to... So, because Garga Muni, I don't think he didn't want to spend the money or something to send me back to Los Angeles. Frugal temple president, conserving his finances. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada had a fund and he sent me from his own fund money to go to India. I raised a little more. So finally I got to Calcutta. And unfortunately we didn't have a separate residence as Srila Prabhupada had wanted. We were still staying in this Gaudiya Mutt, in the temple of Prabhupada's godbrother, Madhav Maharaj, Bhakti Daita Madhav Maharaj. And they treated me very nicely. I stayed there for 2 months. But Prabhupada kept writing us letters, furious, that immediately we have to get another place. Do daily Harinam, and immediately get another place and move out of there and have your own place. As soon as you have your own place, I'm coming. And then Prabhupada flew to Japan, and he kept writing from there, saying, when is finally we found a place in Lake View Road, something like that, near Rashbihari Avenue in South Calcutta. And it was a very nice house built by a doctor. It was a 3-4 story house. And it was brand new. So he said, if a sadhus live in my house, you can stay there free 6 months. If, you know, saintly Krishna conscious devotees stay there, then my house will be blessed. So you can stay there. So he gave us free of rent. Actually, for the first year and a half in Calcutta, I didn't pay any rent. People always gave us houses free, which is probably historic. Neither did we pay for any food to speak of. Most of it was donated. So when we had our new place, we telexed Prabhupada, and he said that he would be coming. And so prepare for his arrival, make it... So I visited all the newspapers. They're just... Achyutananda Das and myself. Achyutananda Das went to all of the God brothers of Prabhupada to invite them to come and meet him at the airport. So he told me that he couldn't get anyone, no one would agree to come. So that's very unusual. Then I also invited one or two, and I invited one Maharaj on the stairs of one temple. He said, yes, I'll go and greet my God brother. Why not? And then some Grihastha Maitreya, you know, Grihastha disciple of one of Prabhupada's God brothers, came up to him and said, you can't go. He's your junior sannyasi. He took sannyas after you did, by, you know, 5 years. You can't go and greet him. So then, you know, he was all, like, intimidated by, so he said, well, you know. So we couldn't actually get any of Prabhupada's God brothers to go to the airport. It was unusual for us. I couldn't understand it. I'd always noticed the difference that when Prabhupada spoke, it seemed to be just earth-shattering and just immediately penetrate the heart. And when I'd hear his godbrother speak, it was very interesting and I could feel like a little tingle, like a little something, but it was just never the same, never had that same overwhelming presence of the spiritual world as I would experience. That was my own subjective experience. But this was completely bewildering to me. So then we all went to the airport to meet Prabhupada. We had truckloads of Harinam Kirtan groups. We had newspapermen. The colonel who was in charge of that Fort William, he was in charge of the reception. So he arranged that Prabhupada didn't have to go through immigration or customs. They picked him up right from the airplane by a car, drove him to the VIP lounge, where he gave a press conference, because, you know, returning celebrity, returning ambassador of Indian culture, they gave him the royal reception. All the big dignitaries came and people greeted him, and we did a kirtan and a reception. But Prabhupada looked around and saw that there were some of his disciples, you know, godbrothers, disciples, but no godbrother was present. And one of the godbrothers had, if you want to know the name later, I'll tell you, but I'll just leave it out now for the sake. One of the godbrothers had invited that we'll give a reception for Prabhupada in our temple, and we'll have a feast ready. He should drive right up to our temple, and we'll give him a reception here. It sounded like a very nice thing. But the godbrothers themselves didn't come to meet Prabhupada at the airport. They sent a disciple. So then we told it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada looked very stern. We had a big American car for him to ride in. And then behind we had all these trucks of kirtan devotees. So we went and had like a procession into the town. But Prabhupada jumped into the car, and Srila Bhaktipada was with Prabhupada, if I'm correct. I think Bhaktipada was with him. Yeah. And somehow Bhaktipada just took the steering wheel, and Prabhupada said, you know, go. And I was arranging with the press and everything, and next thing I know, Bhaktipada was behind the steering wheel, and they're ready to take off. I didn't even know, you know, so I had to just, you know, Prabhupada, I had to just run and jump, get into the car at the last minute. And so then I told this to Srila Prabhupada. He said, we will not go there. Take us directly to our house. Very, you know, couldn't understand, you know, the intricacies. And Prabhupada was just very silent, very stern. And I said, well, we have this kirtan part, but he was just like very, very grave at that time. I never saw Prabhupada so intense, you know, up to that point, as I had seen then. It was a new experience. So then we drove him right straight to the Lake Road house. He liked the house. It was all brand new. We had a little room set up for him with an attached bath and everything. And then Prabhupada explained, he said that they wanted me to go directly to their temple. So then they would take the credit that they had sent me to preach all over the world. If they were sincere, they would have come and met me at the airport and requested me also to visit their temple. But they sat in their temple and didn't come to get me. This is very intricate. What this means, it would appear that I was going and reporting back to them. And then they would publish that they had sent me and now I was going back to them. Therefore, I will not go there. You go there and accept their prasad and bring here, we will take some. So this is my first introduction to intricacies of Indian sadhu etiquette and different, you know, higher level kind of spiritual intrigues. Being very simple. I once wrote to the Prabhupada that what should we do when we meet the sannyasi? When I'm in India, I mean, there'll be so many sannyasis. What should I do? You know, I was very, just wanted to do the proper thing, the proper etiquette. And it was very simple. And he wrote back, oh, you should bow down. And then I, you know, I wrote another, even if he's a Mayavadi, yes, no harm. Just don't listen to them. So, but this was pretty high level intrigue. But anyway, Prabhupada guided us through. And then, that night, you see, of course, being just two brahmacharis together in India, Chutananda Das and myself, you know, sometimes in India, taking sannyas and preaching, these things are very prominent. You know, it doesn't, in the West, there's other things which are more prominent. But there, because of the environment, it's a very good field for preaching and people are more receptive from the renounced order of life. So we were thinking, you know, that sometime possibly Srila Prabhupada would ask us to take sannyas, whether he would or not. what would be his order? Because he had told me once, when my temple president, this was another thing, and anyway, I won't distract you. I can say that. Once my temple president, that time my temple president was Hansa Duda Das, and his wife was Himavati. And I was a bhakta in the temple. And Himavati was trying to get all the, not only brahmacharis, but even the bhaktas married. So at that time I was quite determined to be Krishna conscious, and I wasn't 100% sure that being married was actually what I should be doing. I wasn't close to the idea, but at the same time I wasn't, it was being more or less pushed on me. So I was kind of upset. I came in tears to Prabhupada, what should I do? They're trying to pressure me, this wife of the president. And he said, no, you tell that it's my order that you cannot be married. That the system in India is you wait till you're 25 and the guru decides. And he, at the age of 25, he decides which direction that brahmachari should go. So you wait till you're 25 and then I'll decide. Up until then, you know, hands off. So then I was relieved because I didn't. So then we were thinking, well, maybe if Prabhupada asked us, because we knew he said you can get first and second initiation, you have to ask for that, but to get sannyas, you had to be asked. So he called Achyutananda Das into his quarters, and it was that time, we were all asleep, it was 10 o'clock, but I was, you know, listening, and I heard Prabhupada just shouting at him. At first I thought maybe he's calling him in to get sannyas. I didn't know really what it was. It didn't sound like he's getting sannyas. And it sounded like Prabhupada was very angry, didn't know what was actually happening. And could hear bits and pieces, something about a letter, something about Brahmananda, something about God Brothers. Couldn't really pick it all up together at that time. I knew for one thing, it didn't seem like he was getting sannyas there. So then the next morning, Prabhupada, I think it was the next morning, even that night, he called us in. And that time he explained to us that while Chutananda was in the... Then in the meantime I heard from other God Brothers that there was something happened in New Vrindavan, that some of our sannyasis had gone a little bit crazy. They had been affected by Mayavadi philosophy and so on. And that Prabhupada was very upset. And so then Prabhupada explained that, well, he said Achyutananda is, I don't know if Achyutananda was in the room at the time or not, he might have been, but I don't remember. But he explained that he picked up some criticism or something, and he wrote that in a letter to one of the sannyasis in America, to one of the devotees in America. And as a result of that poison, they became affected and they actually developed the Mayavadi philosophy. And so Prabhupada was actually testing Achyutananda to see if he was really into it, and he said that he's innocent. But he was like a carrier, like a person carries a disease by inadvertently repeating something which was envious. That he actually was a carrier and brought, and through him, this poison had come and affected those four people. Of course, Prabhupada corrected everything. So it's pretty much the first 2 days. It was pretty intense. But after that, then, it was very nice. We had programs in South Calcutta near Gauriahat, and in some Gauriya, Jadavpur, and all over Calcutta, Prabhupada went and did these programs. One program we had this big car. It was a Dodge, 56 Dodge. Was given by a life member that we could drive. I remember Kirtananda Swami used to drive the Dodge in Calcutta. It's a very big car. I mean, in Calcutta it's very crowded, so you drive a big car like that, it's quite... It's a pretty good suspension, though. And kind of floating. When you go over the bumps, it seems you're floating. It was, I forget the name of the group, but it was a very distinguished group who met every 2 weeks. Like Rotary Alliance, but it was not that type of syndicated group. It was a specific one society just for very high class, exclusive citizens of Calcutta, mostly businessmen. And that was held just near, it's right near the corner of what's known as Esplanade, which is just the kind of a real hustle and bustle central part of Calcutta, and up on the second floor. So there was a big program, and Prabhupada spoke, and he inaugurated life membership in India. He said, we're going to have a program, you can visit we have temples all over the world, you can come and stay there. And he inaugurated that you pay 1111 rupees, 1,101, 1, 1, 1, 1. Krishna, God is one. You give 1, 1, 1, 1. So everyone liked that, and about 3-4 people right on the spot, they became life members. And there was a lot of money in those days, 1111 rupees. And I remember that there was actually a struggle, who would be first? Because whoever would be first would be the number one life member. In fact, even to this day, one of the life members who's number two, he tried to get it changed that he could be number one. But when number one heard about it, then he became very upset. So then Prabhupada was, you know, very happy to accept their donations, and he issued the first certificates of life membership. And then there was a big feast. And this was the first time, normally, you know, we'd only eat temple prasad, but this time he said no, because they become life members and for preaching. It's all vegetarian, of course. But then he said we can eat their vegetarian feast. And I remember Prabhupada was sitting at the head, and the devotees were on one side, and these people with new life members and other dignitaries were on the other side. And it was a very wonderful gathering. So that was basically the highlights I remember of how the Calcutta preaching started. Then Prabhupada went to Bombay. Later on he came back, and in May 71, he arrived there in August 70, and May 71, that time when Calcutta was the time of what they call the United Front. It was a coalition government of leftist parties. But that time, the leftist parties, they weren't very cohesive, and there was a lot of violence. The Naxals, there was that time the Naxal movement of Marxist-Leninist radical revolutionaries who were on the rampage. And so the scenario in Calcutta was that every day there were 14, 12 murders. They pick out big businessmen, big politicians, all over eastern India, but especially in Bengal, especially Calcutta area, but even, I think even in Jamshedpur, and spread it, you know, it was very rampant. And where we were living was in North Calcutta, in a very sensitive area. It was Jatindra Mohan Avenue, near Bidan Street, which is just in the heart of a very crowded area of Calcutta, and in all little alleys and lanes, and in there were very political activists. So on the street at that time, there were sandbags put up by the police, and they would be sitting there with their guns, and they'd actually just be holding. When you went by at night, you'd have to raise your arms and walk by with your hands in the air. And there was right below our window, we often saw that from one side of the road, one group of political gang almost, you know, but political supporters would come, and they'd be carrying little athletic bags filled with bombs. And then from the other side, they'd come and they'd like a snowball fight. They'd throw the bombs, and that bomb would hit, and you'd see that once people spin off and roll on the ground, the bomb would explode. And then they'd get up and they'd throw one, and you'd see them run, you know, with more bombs the guy would carry with glasses, and like a mad scientist kind of guy. And sometimes they get hit, and sometimes then the police would come, usually long after everything was over, but sometimes they come. One time they came and they were chasing a boy into the alley, and we heard gunshots, and we saw him drag out this body completely riddled. So it was like a very dangerous time in Calcutta. At that time, we were trying to preach there. And that time, Prabhupada called us to the Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. And that's a whole other story, the Kumbh Mela story, that we could discuss that later. But when we went to the Kumbh Mela, then Prabhupada told me that I'm never going to Calcutta until you get enough. That time I want our own place. I want our own place, that we have our temple. That time we were staying in a half a floor of a apartment building that one gentleman had given us, but he wanted, you know, our own house, a whole floor to ourselves that we could perpetually stay in, at least for some time. So then it was like I had to leave the Kumbh Mela a few days early. Went back to Calcutta, and we found in the present place where we still are, on Albert Road, we found that place, and one gentleman was going to make it into a hotel office 6 months later. But for right now, he didn't have any need for it, so he can have it free of rent for 6 months. So that was, we said, telegram Prabhupada, and he came by train. So then we arranged to have, in May, a big pandal in downtown Calcutta. So Prabhupada got a letter in the mail, which was, you know, cut out from magazines, the letters, you know, like the, you, may, you know how they cut out, you see in the movies. We got one of those. Several. You leave town now or die. Naxal Salam. Several like that, you know. So then Prabhupada called the police and gave it over. He said, we're not, you know, go on with our program. We won't. They threatened, if you don't stop your pandal program, you'll be killed. Prabhupada said, just go on with it. So we formed the police, that extra guard. While we were doing our pandal program in Calcutta, it was the biggest pandal in India, probably even to date. It was a huge pandal. It was about bigger than a football field, about twice the size of a football field. 300 feet long by 300, about 400 feet long by 300 feet wide. It was huge, and it was completely packed with people. It was right opposite the Indian Museum. We had all kind of really big dignitaries came and spoke. The Deputy Chief Minister, one Mr. Nahar, he spoke. I think just at that time the government changed. But, you know, it was still a very agitated time. It was a very disturbed time. But Prabhupada, he just said, go on with the preaching. We distributed prasad every night, halva, sabji, and puris to thousands and thousands of people. And Prabhupada would come every night. He'd arti, and he'd lecture, and he was very bold in his preaching. So at that time he sent Tamalkrishna Goswami and Bali Mardan Das to Mayapur to buy the Mayapur land that we had found, Chaitanya Das and myself had found. But I was busy with this program, so I stayed in Calcutta. So at that time, there were several things that happened. All day Prabhupada would be sitting in his room, and big dignitaries would come. He'd always preach to them how they should help the Krishna conscious movement, because they were the religious Indians. They were very, you know, that if the Indian community gave support, then all over the world this would give a strength to the Krishna conscious preaching. I remember that one day this minister, he was the home minister of the government at that time, Tarun Kanti Ghosh, he came to see Srila Prabhupada. And in India, it's customary that people try to touch the feet of sadhus. But Prabhupada would sometimes get sick because so many people would touch him and they'd get their karma. He said that if you touch the feet, then they give you the karma, but it's not good for the sadhus because then they have to take that karma. So actually only the disciples should touch the feet. So normally Brahmananda, someone would, Swami, they would stop people from touching Prabhupada's feet. And sometimes they'd be too enthusiastic and Prabhupada would say, up to a point you can stop someone. You can't. You can entreat them. You can request, please don't touch. But, I mean, if somebody's really, you know, diving, you know, then, you know, you can't have like a whole battle or something. So, in this case, the minister, he came and he said that, I'm going to touch your feet, Swami. You know, Prabhupada tried to get out of it. No. And he just, you know, he just grabbed. You know, and then, you know, I forget who was there, Brahmananda Swami or someone, whoever was there, they're already right then, you know. And the Prabhupada said, all right, you know, I mean, he didn't want, you know, minister of the government to get, you know, assaulted or something. So then he went and just put his head right on Prabhupada's feet. And then Prabhupada touched him on the head. Prabhupada said there was some system where you can actually pass back the karma. I don't want to know that technique. But then we were sitting there, and that morning in class, Prabhupada had been saying that how all the devotees, that some of the devotees were being sent by Lord Chaitanya, that they were devotees previously. He sometimes would say like that. So this minister, he just came in and he just said, you know, I've seen your devotees chanting and seen them. And my impression is that they were born in Bengal before, but they were devotees before. This is not their first birth. How is it they so quickly they could take all these things up? And then Prabhupada, he turned to us and said, just see, confirm. Just what I have been saying to you. He has also said, this is a confirmation. So then, I remember that time then, he had the darshan with a gentleman, and then even again Prabhupada just said, just see, this is confirmed what I had said. And then I remember standing up, and then I told Prabhupada that, but Prabhupada, how can this be? I'm so fallen. How could it be that I was a devotee before? And then, you know, the Prabhupada, became angry. He said, do not doubt my words. Do not doubt. That is all superficial. And, you know, because he became very angry, immediately paid our obeisances. The many, every day, there just be batches of people, always, sometimes his relatives came, rarely. He'd introduce us, especially Pishima, his younger sister and god sister, she'd come. I remember one time she insisted that she wanted to cook for Srila Prabhupada. She made the whole thing. Prabhupada was like, she has to let her do it. She was a very, very good cook. But she always, you know, made such a big, you know, production out of it. Sometimes she'd prepare preparations with mustard oil. And then we, you know, Prabhupada always told her, mustard oil is for your body, it's not for eating. So Prabhupada said, mustard oil. She said, no, but mustard oil is very good tasting if you know how to cook with it. So from her cooking, he would take one or two preparations with mustard, although normally it was always with ghee. I said, but not too much, but one preparation is all right. And I remember one time, Prabhupada got a little dysentery, because the water in Calcutta is such that you can get dysentery there sometimes. The sewage is built from the British time. The sewage and water pipes are very close or something. I don't know, but somehow you can get sick there quite easily. So even Prabhupada, maybe from the feasting with the life members or somehow he had the leela of having dysentery. So he said that today I want to have hot puris and salt. Hot puris. Because dysentery normally have diarrhea and then you never take ghee. He said, no, this is one cure. To take hot puris. It's to be piping hot with salt. Order of the guru. So they cooked hot puri. I think Pishima herself cooked them the first time. Brought in piping, just steaming puris. Real small, thin, hot puris. He put salt on them and he ate a lot of them. Everybody thought, because normally if you take pakoras or puri something when you have a weak stomach, then forget it. Your liver doesn't, but just by this, like by a mystic power, the Prabhupada was completely cured by hot puris and salt. So that was a new one for all the devotees. They never. Yes, I think in Mayapur once I saw somebody try it, Bhavananda Martin. Then, is there some prasad to give? Then there was another thing that happened there. Oh, one time, you know, we may have a lot of learning to do. In India, we had hired the Prabhupada said, well, because nobody knew how to cook Indian style, so he said we could hire a Brahmin. if he didn't smoke and if he, you know, we could hire a Brahmin. So then we hired a cook. I forget, at that time, Soda Nandan Maharaj or Garga Muni Maharaj, someone else was there. The assistant to the cook was a better chapati roller. He was really great chapati roller. Thin, nice to the puff up, fantastic chapati roller. So somehow one of the other devotees thought that let him do the cooking. He was a better cook than the Brahmin cook. So then he was doing the cooking for a few days for some time. I didn't like it, but I was overwhelmed by, because at that time my temple I had Vibhadi Nandan, and Guru Das, Shyam Sundar, Giridaj, Garga Muni. I had Sonandan, Guru Kripa, Jamuna, Malati. These were, you know, pretty strong-willed devotees, to say the least. And so they, somehow or another, they decided that they wanted to have this person cook. And we were on a little austerity program. I was only letting them use a half a kilo of ghee a day, which wasn't making me very popular. At that time, Prabhupada was pretty tight budget. So, Prabhupada came, and someone complained to him about the cooking, you know, that they weren't getting enough ghee. So he came out and he saw, what are those? These are the chapatis. Why there's no ghee on them? He said, that's food fit for the goat. Really, he said it real heavy. You know, it's food fit for ghost, because chapati without ghee, it fits for the ghost. Then he said, bring the cook. So when they brought the cook, you know, who is this character? And they said that he's, you know, he's not a Brahmin. Then he said, you're eating not only food fit for the ghost, but it's being cooked by a fifth class man. So he blasted us. I forget some of the heaviest things I've ever heard. And because at least the Brahmana has some, normally they would have, even in India, I mean, they have some understanding about hygiene or things like that, but a non-Brahmana, non-Vaishnava, you know, they don't know what they're going to do, you know, they don't have that training, that upbringing to act in a very clean and hygienic way. So like this, Prabhupada was teaching us so many things, even there in Calcutta. Remember one time we have in Calcutta, it was a big veranda with a marble floor. And I was the president there, but every time my GBC would come, because GBCs were real new then, that was 1971, so Prabhupada just appointed GBCs. They didn't really know exactly what their role was. So he'd come and I wouldn't be doing things the way he'd do them. So then he'd want to do everything right way. But instead of telling me how to do them, he'd be so impatient that he would fire me and he'd take over as president. And then he'd do everything his way. Then Prabhupada would come and say, what are you doing? You're supposed to be the GBC. You're not supposed to manage the temple. Remove him and put me back as the president. Like this, I was removed about 8 times. And every time I was replaced, either by Prabhupada or by the GBC. I remember that the GBC said, I have to have my own room. I have to have my own room to meet people and for preaching and, you know, just, you know, some. So we didn't have any rooms in the Calcutta temple. It's such a weird design. It's like a very old palatial kind of building, which is anyway divided in half, and just big rooms and high 18 foot high ceilings. So there really wasn't any room that we could offer. There was one room for Prabhupada, there was a temple room, there was a veranda, there was a little office, there was only rooms in the whole place. There wasn't any other room. Even the president didn't have a room. Just kind of floating. So, but he insisted on having a room, so he built he got some plywood and built a little shanty on a little room. Very nice, you know, kind of simple, little Masonite 8-inch plywood, built it up on the veranda with a little door, painted it blue, real bright blue, like the color of Balabhadra's t-shirt lapel there, kind of turquoise bright blue. And that was his little room. Well, that room lasted until Prabhupada came. What is this? This is ruining my veranda. This is ruining my veranda. And why you build, I forget the exact words that you have, why you're building this, you know, shanty, you know, this, you know, on my veranda. To tear it down immediately. The GBC was crushed. We all told him that, you know, this is kind of strange. It cuts into the veranda, this, that, you know. So while Prabhupada was telling that, you know, we had to, like, look serious, because otherwise, you know, we didn't want to get... But it was real hard. Everybody was covering up. So I was the last of the blue room. There are many little things. How about one time he said that nobody was spending too much on taxis. Everyone should take a tram. The trams were cost 10 paisa in India. About, at that time, 10 paisa went less than a cent. So that you could ride anywhere in the city for 10 paisa. But it took forever. It was real slow as compared to a taxi. And you had to, you know, public bus system. But this wasn't even a bus. Buses were fast, but this was tram. You could go by bus, but buses are very crowded. Tram was a little better. So most of the devotees went by tram. 12 paisa, 10 paisa. You go first class was 12 paisa, normal was 10. But if you went 10 paisa, all the seats had these bed bugs, and you sit on it, and you'd stand up, your whole rear end would be striped with where just where you sat, and the crack of the seat would be wooden street seats. They'd all come out of the cracks and bite. And in first class, they had a little bit of Rexine plastic with some fiber, you know, and a little bit of padding. It's for 2 paisa more, but the bed bugs didn't get through it. So sometimes the devotees would, you know, spend a little extra and go by the tram, first class. So because Prabhupada had said, we took it literally, we did. But then later on it turned out that it cut into the collections. And so in the meantime, I was transferred to Mayapur. And the new president got permission from Prabhupada that if the devotees collected more, you know, by going, if they were able to do more Sankirtan by going by taxi, that was all right. But it shouldn't, you know, shouldn't just be they're going by taxi for the sake of going by taxi, but should be that due to getting increased productivity. And one time, actually the time when Prabhupada was going from Calcutta to the Kumbh Mela, then he said, in the train, sometimes Prabhupada would take, he would always take a box lunch, but sometimes he'd get hungry and the lunch would run out. So sometimes he would send me out and he would take puris cooked on the station, hot puri and sabji. And he said that if you buy, then there's no karma. And if it's cooked in ghee, cooked, deep frying, then the transference of the bad mentality doesn't go so much. He said in traveling, he quoted some Sanskrit verse that in traveling it's all right, in emergency. Although later, when we were more together and we cooked a better, bigger lunch, then he wouldn't do that, or he would never do that. He didn't do it in the airplanes much either, I don't think at all. But sometimes, one time anyway, because we weren't very together at that time, only a few devotees. And apparently got a little hungry, so I said, well, anyway, you can get. So I remember I went out on the station, and I was trying to procure those things and buy some oranges. And somehow I didn't notice that the train was taking off. I looked, and there the train was, woo-woo, you know, was going off. I saw the train running. Because, you know, we missed the train, you know, there's nothing you can do. And I missed Prabhupada's car, and by that time the train was going real fast, and I didn't know how to get it. So one conductor reached down and pulled me up. And it was in the AC first class compartment, all air conditioned. Prabhupada wouldn't go in the air conditioned class. He used to go in the first class. In those days, first class was much better than it is today. But then somehow at the next stop, I got down and ran up and met Srila Prabhupada and gave him the prasanna. He said, "Where were you?" He just was very nonchalant about it. And I remember they were sitting there, and because there was, you know, we didn't have proper plates or any tray or anything. So then, you know, because of the situation, one hand he had a banana and the other hand said, "This time, you know, I never see this, you know, eating with two hands, but here on the train, just, you know, did it sheer logistics." He was taking with two hands. And that time, Prabhupada was, somehow the discussion came about milk. I don't know if I should mention the name of who said this. So then, Tamal Krishna Das Adhikari at that time, he was asking Prabhupada that in India there's so many kinds of milk. Here they have buffalo and cow, but then buffalo, goat, just like so many. I mean, you don't see, you know, in the West you don't have buffalo, you know, maybe some goat, but it's like so many. And somehow he said, "Do dogs give milk?" Something like that. And Prabhupada was, you know, probably just "That's not milk." "That's not milk." Then he said that apart from cow, buffalo, and goat, nothing else is not milk. It was very intimate. I mean, we're just, you know, being in the same compartment with Srila Prabhupada, you know, going to Alaba. Of course, no one would sleep above him, so we had purchased him two berths. But then opposite, there'd be two people, and then in the room next. But when we are going, he'd bring everyone in. So we'd be sitting across, either down on the ground or on the seat across, and he'd be sitting up in one seat, cross-legged. We put a cloth there. So this very intimate opportunity. And I wish I could remember a lot of very wonderful instructions he gave them. Because it's so intimate, therefore, you know, you could normally never ask something like that. It's so intimate. And Tamal, it was just right by his lotus feet. But, you know, you tend to just, you know, not think what you're saying before you say it. But normally in another more formal situation that would never happen, but, you know, just kind of like making. But then as soon as you say something that wasn't, you know, on, then of course immediately Prabhupada would assert his absolute transcendental position. So one thing happened in Calcutta that one day we're sitting in his room. I think that they, in his room he'd always have it completely white. There'd be mattresses on the floor and he'd cover them with white sheets. And he had big bolster pillows and a seat and a nice, not so opulent, but a nice desk with a glass cover. And he'd be sitting there and everything would be white, the room would be white, all covered with clean sheets which were changed every day. One speck on them would be changed, but always kept immaculately clean. And incense burning. And there were two, three of us sitting, I think maybe that time, I forget exactly who was there, but I was sitting right in front of Srila Prabhupada. And there were about three other devotees at that time. And he started just to tell his stories. He said that in Bengal there was one Gopal Bhar, who was the court barber. And he was a very, he said there's a story. And he said, see how did it come? That there's a very high pressure in the king court. The king was the judge, he was administrator, everything was on his shoulders. So sometimes between sessions, you know, they need a little relief. Comical relief or humorous relief, or so nobody could play off the king. Everyone had to, you know, "My lord." But the barber, or it's like a barber, kind of like, I guess in a Western context, you might say was a court jester. Prabhupada never exactly explained what he was, but he was the one person, courtier, in the court who had the right that he could spoof with the king. That was his unique position. But similarly, the king would always treat all his other ministers with great respect, would never treat them lightly. But the king could also, you know, spoof with this guy. So one day, the king came in, Gopal Bhar came in, Prabhupada explained, just to give a little background. And Prabhupada just started explaining this, Gopal Bhar came in, the king said, Gopal, you are an ass. Sitting there listening. Then Prabhupada explains that Gopal said, no, there's a difference between me and an ass. And the king said, Gopal, you are an ass. He says, no, your majesty, there's a difference between me and an ass. Oh, Gopal, there's a difference between you and an ass? Yes. Like, what is that difference? Then he was standing about 6 feet from the king. He measured off the distance from the king and he said, 6 feet. And Prabhupada was laughing. This is the first time we'd ever seen Prabhupada crack a joke. We were a little, we didn't know whether to, because Prabhupada was laughing, so we were laughing, but we were a little bit afraid, you know, we didn't want to do the wrong thing also. Actually, he just suddenly told it, then he explained how the king has this way, and he said that, actually, even in the humor, even in the Vedic humor, there's messages. Then he just proceeded to tell more Gopal Bhar stories. This is famous, he said, there's a big book in Bengal, the histories of this king, Krishna Chandra, who is Krishna Nagar, near Mayapur, is named after Krishna Chandra, and his court, famous court advisor is Gopal Bhar. So, he told the story that one day, Prabhupada told the story of he said that one day, the king had a new son, heir to the throne. The whole kingdom was rejoicing. So, at that time, when the king was father, heir, prince, very, very joyful occasion. So then Gopal just happened to show up at that time. So he came and said, Gopal, Gopal, this joyous occasion of the birth of, you know, the crown prince, you know, what do you have to say? Tell me at this moment, tell me, how are you feeling? So then Gopal Bhar said, to be sincere, I'm feeling very happy after passing school. Oh, Gopal! You're so gross! How could you say so? And the king became thoroughly disgusted. Just, you know, here's the sake of the Brahmins are doing food, it's a big thing, and then just suddenly, the grossest thing. You know. So after that, but Gopal said, don't be angry, you asked me to tell you how I was feeling, I'm just telling you the truth. Gopal said, oh, this is out of taste. You're crude. You have no cooth, you know, just. So after that, the king was, he was very cold relationship with Gopal. He became very much, you know, the very dangerous, this courtier relationship, you know, very sensitive. The king was very turned, you know, very displeased with, after that, it was a cold relationship, but just formally. And he took it very personally. So then, after some time, Prabhupada explained that one day the Gopal, after many months, was taking him on a boat ride, and was rowing the boat, and the king said to Gopal, pull over. They have to nature called. He started to say, no, this is not a good place. So thieves and things congregate here. It's a bad place. He kept on rowing. He said, a little further, listen. Then they wait a while, and the king said, now go, Paul, you pull over right away. He said, no, I can't see. It's a very rough area here. It's not a good place. Thorns and things. So the king said, no, I want you to pull over here right away. He said, just a little further, there's a better place there, you know. Immediately, pull over. Cannot wait any longer. The king was really getting it. So then Gopal pulled over and the king jumped out and, you know, did his business, nature called. So then when he came back after washing the thing, came back, and then Gopal said that, how do you feel? He said, I feel relieved. And I said, remember that day when Crown Prince was born? Such a thing happened to me, and just at that moment you asked me how I was feeling. And so I just told you, now do you understand? The king then said, go, Paul. So that when Prabhupada was laughing, you know, but that was too much for us. We didn't know what to say. We just said, we tried to laugh, but it was like, we didn't know, you know. Because the relationship with Prabhupada was so formal that you didn't know, you know, was that this was really an intimate joke, and the punchline was not the normal kind you get in the West. So, but Prabhupada didn't stop there. He said, no, actually there's many cultural things to learn from these stories. You know, what is the position of the king? What is the... And he told another story. He said that one time Gopal was making a new house. And according to the Vedic culture, when you make a new house, it's to become completely clean. No one should pass a stool there. And if they do, then they can't, because you have to do pujas and house, grihe probation, then you can use the house. The Prabhupada was trying to explain that, you know, this is the humor, this is just the normal humor, it doesn't get any worse than this. But actually, even in the humor, the whole, it's all based upon the subtle relationships and the culture of the Vedas. So here, he's building his house, he's going to have his puja as soon as it's completed. So the king offers in the court that Gopal is building a new house. If anybody can go there and defile his house, can go there and pass nature called, you know, stool in his house, I'll give 1,000 silver coins. So then one party said, I'll do it. Took the challenge. So then he made a plan, you know, what to do. So one day, Gopal was there supervising his house construction, seeing everything that's going on. Because the house, though he'd be seated, you know, he wouldn't want any, he'd just be there, seeing that everything was done properly. They had Brahmins do the foundation, the stone setting, people building according to the Artha Shastra, everything. Even for an ordinary house, they're very careful. So suddenly this man came up and said, Gopal, Gopal! It's an extreme emergency. I have to immediately answer a nature call. Please allow me to use your new bathroom. Gopal thought, this is very strange. Why he wants to use my new bathroom? Said, yes, it's all right. And Prabhupada explained. Then the person went and he positioned himself in the bathroom, you know, and he wanted to close the door. He said, Gopal, what are you doing standing there with that big stick? Why don't you let me close the door? He says, no, you can pass stool. But if you pass one drop of urine, I'm going to beat your head in and kill you. So then they said, Gopal, you win. And he ran off. You know. That was the final, that was really too much for us. But But indirectly, we were taught that how actually this was teaching Vedic culture. I mean, even in the humor that they had to do puja, defile. I mean, this was where kings, you know, they were had this was their life side of their day. They were playing games, but even the games were based on this whole Vedic culture. Even it was, you know, intertwined. And you can't, just like they say, you know, Krishna, it's so much intertwined that even if somebody gets a little bit, they call this tamasa. Joking is for like tamagun. So these aren't like the spiritual instructions or something, but even though these are so kind of crude or whatever, but at the same time, it's like within it, the whole cultural values are completely intertwined. And those were the stories that Prabhupada told us. Of course, other places we told, there are other more, you know, there are other different stories. It was actually just a couple of devotees were there, just like a light moment. Prabhupada opened up and just told us a little bit of what the local humor was like. That way Prabhupada was trying to show that, alright, even, you know, in the humor, in the humor that has been handed down, he said, this is taught in all the high schools, these stories. It's like it's part of the history of Bengal. That even within the humor, there's this cultural connection. There's one more story how, you want to hear one more Gopal Bhar story?
Hey.
Gopal Bhar was really smart. One day the king was going on procession and with his courtiers and everyone. And then he saw that there was a brahmana was wearing a shaligram shila around his neck and a silk bag. And then the brahmana walked off to the side of the road, and just with a shaligram shila around his neck, he evacuated. So the king said, arrest him. Had him arrested. Had him brought to the court and said, what type of Brahmin are you? You're carrying a shaligram shila. And then you can do such a thing. You don't know that's Narayan? That's God? How can you, you know, go to the bathroom, you know, wearing a shaligram shila? You're not a Brahmana. What do you have to say for yourself? You know, you're just shaking. So he said that at sundown, you'll be beheaded. If a Brahmin like you commit offense to Narayan in our kingdom, then our whole kingdom will be destroyed by the offense. So you're not a Brahmana, therefore, for committing this offense, you should give your life. So the Brahmana was completely petrified. You could have hung it up or something. Why? How can you just wear it? And then Gopal said, but Your Majesty, he's just the carrier of the Lord. He's just the carrier of the shaligram shila. I mean, the king had just sentenced him to death. Suddenly Gopal interjects, he's just the carrier, you know, so he just, you know. So it wasn't the time, you know, one of Gopal's jokes or something. What do you mean, Gopal? What do you mean he's just a carrier? Don't butt in now. This is a serious business. No, but Your Majesty, he's just a carrier. So, you know, the king, you know, he knew that something was up. He said, what do you mean? What do you mean he was just a carrier? He was carrying the shaligram shila while he passed through. Could there be a greater offense? But Your Majesty, he was just a carrier. Explain yourself. What do you mean he's just a carrier? And he said, well, my lord, your horse was carrying you. When your horse has stool, did you take a bath? Did you feel contaminated? Release him! Never do this again. Gopal, you did it again. So, it gave a different angle at, you know, Vedic culture, that there were, you know, very personal relations and very personal things, and yeah. Of course, these are not the pure devotees. I mean, these are, you know, not pure devotees. So these are not the great saints. These are just, this is a king in about 500 years ago, 400 years ago. Just after the time of Lord Chaitanya, before the British came, during the Mughal period. But even then, just only about 300 years ago, Vedic culture was so strong. And these are the basic ones that we heard from Paul. I became so curious that actually I bought the book. So I can go on till a lot. Prabhupada just gave us a sampling, just to show that there was another aspect, you know, of India, a little lighter side. But that even the lighter side, that it had its roots in the Vedic culture. And similarly, that he told us some of the unusual way that, you know, how, like, you could see how Vedic culture, how 5,000 years ago there was complete total Vedic culture, and how over the time, you know, gradually got watered down, and how it kind of intermingled with Maya as time went on. It came with, you know, unusual combinations, some of them which are completely, totally mind-boggling. Prabhupada to point out and show that how, you know, how you could still see certain remnants of the Vedic culture, trained how to pick out where you could see the roots in the Vedic culture, in the humor or in the lifestyle or in the history of that modern and near modern recent time. So Robert slapped his knee, was laughing. He told a joke. He didn't know whether to laugh or cry. A lot of these Gopal Bhar stories, you know, the punchline is kind of, it's more like a situation which is very cryptic, very humorous, and then surprise ending. And then the surprise ending is humorous. Any questions? Yeah? It's too late for this, a long story.
You said before when you invited the Prabhupada's godbrother,
no, not. Yeah, well, it's like in the family tree.
Right.
Cousin brother.
So, but my wife, he was saying that you shouldn't visit Prabhupada because he had taken initiation, so that's initiation before Prabhupada. But now he was giving instruction and he was a disciple. So, why did he take his, you know, instruction or advice?
Well, it was obviously political.
It was also,
that's why in Lord Chaitanya's time this wasn't there. This was the whole thing that for a long time we kind of kept clear from the other mission. That's warmed up a lot now. I mean, Prabhupada brought us closer together, but it's still, the, you know, formal, because Prabhupada, you know, was actually someone who may have taken sannyas later, but he was very close to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur often, you know, some occasion praised Prabhupada and gave him very specific private instructions. But apparently his success in preaching all over the world, the response it should have brought was complete cooperation and everything. And Prabhupada comments on this fact in his Chaitanya Charitamrita purport, especially in the Madhya one. I think it's the Madhya one. Going to Ram Kali, is that Madhya one?
About
Madhya 1. maybe it's Madhya too, or where Lord Chaitanya meets Rupa Goswami and Ram Keli. He's going to Vrindavan. That's what I had the first one, Madhya 1. Look over. Birth after birth, you have been my eternal servants. I am sure that Krishna will deliver you very soon. The Lord then placed his two hands in the heads of both of them. In return, they immediately placed the lotus feet of the Lord on their heads. After this, the Lord embraced both of them and requested all of the devotees present to be merciful upon them and deliver them. When all of the devotees saw the mercy of the Lord upon the two brothers, they were very gladdened, and they began to chant the holy name of the Lord, Hari Hari. Purport. Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Charya Vaishnava Seva Nishtar Paya Chekeva. Unless one serves a Vaishnava, he cannot be delivered. The spiritual master initiates a disciple to deliver him, and if the disciple executes the order of the spiritual master and does not offend other Vaishnavas, his path is clear. Consequently, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested all the Vaishnavas present to show mercy toward the two brothers, Rupa and Sanatana, who had just been initiated by the Lord. When a Vaishnava sees that another Vaishnava is the recipient of the Lord's mercy, he becomes very happy. Vaishnavas are not envious. If a Vaishnava by the mercy of the Lord is empowered by him to distribute the Lord's holy name all over the world, other Vaishnavas become very joyful. That is, if they are truly Vaishnavas. One who is envious of the success of a Vaishnava is certainly not a Vaishnava himself, but an ordinary mundane man. Envy and jealousy are manifested by mundane people, not by Vaishnavas. Why should a Vaishnava be envious of another Vaishnava who is successful in spreading the holy name of the Lord? An actual Vaishnava is very pleased to accept another Vaishnava who is bestowing the Lord's mercy. A mundane person addressed of a Vaishnava should not be respected, but rejected. This is enjoined in the Shastras, Upeksha. The word Upeksha means neglect. One should neglect an envious person. A preacher's duty is to love the Supreme Personality of Godhead, make friendships with the Vaishnavas, show mercy to the innocent, and reject or neglect those who are envious or jealous. There are many jealous people in the dress of Vaishnavas in this Krishna consciousness movement, and they should be completely neglected. There is no need to serve a jealous person who is in the dress of a Vaishnava. When Narottam Das Thakur says, Charya Vaishnava Seva Nistar Paya Chekeva, he is indicating an actual Vaishnava, not an envious or jealous person in the dress of a Vaishnava. So when Prabhupada wrote these purports, it was not only for this kind of Krishna conscious movement, but for the other Krishna conscious movement as well, other followers of Lord Chaitanya. But of course, we don't have to kindly forgive our rudeness in repeating those Gopal Bhar stories publicly, more for the sake of history. If anyone felt embarrassed, then they should cover their ears.